We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Talk 1080. This is Will Marotti, the Will Marotti Show. Will is I feel fine. I feel absolutely fine. My voice is just not fine, but I am under doctor supervision. I am under care, taking medication. I'm taking Manuka honey. Supposed to be and many of you now have contacted me and said it's a wonder. Not a drug. It's not a drug. It's very natural. It's a honey that comes from New Zealand or Australia, and it has incredible medicinal purposes. Anyway, we've got Chris Powell on the line, but I told John and Wayne I'd grab their calls before because they've been waiting for a long time. John, thank you so much for waiting. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on. Thank you for waiting.
Oh, hey, Will. Hey, yeah, sorry to hear about your about being sick and all that, but
no, I'm good. I feel fine. Thank you.
All right, let me start off by explaining why I don't call up more than I want to. You have some great listeners and callers, and you know, I feel like sometimes if I call up, I'm not adding anything to the show when it comes to, like, you know, people from Simsbury and Rudy and Ken.
Oh, sure.
It seems like they sit up and research this stuff. And if not, yeah. I mean, they're very intelligent people. So with that being said, I'm going to make a comment about the Electoral College without doing any research.
Okay.
The fact that you have 30% of Americans that feel that the country is going in the right direction is exactly the reason not to ever get rid of the Electoral College.
Amen.
Because if you ever got rid of the Electoral College, they will be the ones that would be deciding the presidents.
Right. Well, as you say, John, and I have done some research on it, one of the main reasons the Founding Fathers opted for the Electoral College is exactly what you're saying. They didn't want mob rule. They didn't want the smallest, loudest, most angriest group to get control of the country. And it has a lot to do with population centers. So who would lead the country? The West Coast and the East Coast. Everybody else, we don't care what you think. So the Electoral College is so vital to our republic. It's unbelievable. It'd be a disaster without it.
Absolutely is. It's just something that you always hear, but no one really explains it all that well. You know, it's like. You got the theory and all that, and people are probably sitting there, what are you talking about? How does that even make sense?
Right.
You need more than 50% of somebody to agree on something, or else the extremists are the ones that win.
Right. You know? No, that's exactly what's going to happen. So, no, you are so correct, and I hope that we never fall for the lie that, oh, you know, because we don't have a democracy. A democracy is one person, one vote, and it's all, and that's how it gets determined. We have a democratic republic, much, much different. All right. One last quick call, and then Chris Powell. Wayne in Bristol. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning. How you doing, Pastor Will?
Good. How are you?
And I was just wondering about, says, if you had the opportunity to watch Dinesh D'Souza's 2,000 Mules, and what your thoughts are on that.
You know, I've gotten so many comments and incredible reviews about it. I'm going to watch it probably after May. I'm just too busy right now. but I do want to watch it. And I think it's probably, from what I'm reading and what people are telling me, it's a great warning signal to us. We've got to watch out. We've got to watch all aspects of the election and be very careful and monitor these things, because this ballot harvesting, ballot stuffing stuff is just, it's just poisonous to the election process.
Well, they already are starting, you know, the primary votes, and we're already voting. How many months ahead is that, you know?
Yeah, and again, I would eliminate early voting.
You know?
I would eliminate early voting. Listen, everybody knows when the election is. Same time every time. It starts at 6 o'clock in the morning, you're there at 8 o'clock at night. If you can't find a time to vote, then if you're out of town or you're somewhere and you're incapacitated, you get an absentee ballot. But this early voting, this mail-in balloting, it's ripe. It's ripe for fraud, and it's absolutely horrible.
Please check that out, you know, about that.
I'm going to.
This thing, and maybe you can do something on your show about
we'll get the author on, Dinesh D'Souza, try to get him on. Wayne, thank you so much for your call. All right, now joining us on the hotline, the former managing editor of the Journal Inquirer, the one, the only, Chris Powell. Chris, thanks for being patient. Welcome to the show.
No, I'd be listening to it anyway, Will, so don't apologize to me.
Hey, listen, this caught my eye and just absolutely grabbed me when I saw this, because, you know, we've had Democrat rule in Connecticut for a long, long time, decades. I mean, there's been some brief exceptions, some windows, but yet we have a problem with poor people. And your article here, this is what I want you to talk about. Why can't Connecticut ever lift the poor to the middle class? You know, it's a great question, because if you didn't know better, you think it was planned. I mean, honestly, how incompetent. We can't. Our programs are doing more to keep people in poverty than lift them out of poverty, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, that's really the suggestion of history here. You know, 50 years ago, one of the first things I was assigned to as a young reporter was to cover a conference that was being held, I think it was in West Hartford, it might have been in Hartford as well, but its topic was the concentration of poverty in Connecticut cities and, you know, what could be done about it. That was, you know, 50 years ago, and the situation is just as desperate now, probably more so than it was then, in spite of all the attention that supposedly has been paid to the issue. The cities are ever more poor and ever more desperate and, you know, suffering crime and other depravity. And I just have to suspect that, the reason up for it is because we don't care. We just accept it as the natural order of things. We assume that nothing, you know, can be done about it. I think maybe we're demoralized about it. I think the other reason is that, you know, poverty is now a big business. This is a common phenomenon in government and politics. You see a problem, you start a program in the name of solving the problem, or at least ameliorating it, and the program, you know, becomes the aim in itself. It's just sustaining itself. It loses sight of the problem it's supposed to be solving. If we really cared about the poverty in the cities, we'd at least audit the results of our policies. And we don't audit
can't
the results
that, Chris.
Of our policies.
Come on. You want to check on the effectiveness of what we're doing? Can't do that. Come on.
Yeah, and,
we're
and
government. We don't do that.
That would be the beginning of a solution, at least to see if what we're doing works. But I don't think we're really trying to eliminate poverty anymore. I think we're just sustaining the people who are employed in the name of eliminating poverty. That doesn't make them bad people, but it means that the policy is failing, and we won't even audit it. And I think really it's coming to the point where government is manufacturing poverty. You know, my hobby horses and the welfare policy destroying the family and education policy in Connecticut now is is only social promotion and then throwing more and more money at school staff, even though we don't get any improvement in school performance in the cities. But we don't audit these failures. Well, why not? And I guess we don't audit them because the policies are just employing too many people who'd be upset if we moved their water dish.
I mean, think about it. I hate to sound jaded, but you know how I feel about government. Think if we eliminated, let's just throw a number at it. Let's eliminate 25% of people that are poor and move them into the middle class, self-sustaining, working people, taking care of themselves, not needing the government. How much bureaucracy and how many people could we get out of work if we just did that? 25%, right? I mean, this is all about big. It's just, I mean, again, I'm not looking for you to agree with this, but I this is how I feel. I feel it's the same thing with abortion. It's big business. People make lots of money off of it. Poverty in America has become big business. How many trillions of dollars have we spent on the war on poverty since Lyndon Johnson? And you know what? We haven't improved. And in some cases, you go to San Francisco, Seattle, it's worse. It's worse than it's ever been. So, you know, I just think there's too much money involved. And I think there's too many people that, again, as you said, just trying to sustain their jobs. The last thing they want is less poor people.
Yeah, you know, if government ever solved any of these problems, you know, the people who were employed by the problem-solving agency would have to find another line of work. But you take education. I would like to ask anybody in authority, and certainly the candidates for governor this year, how does social promotion in the schools contribute to self-sufficiency? For young people as they're growing up,
it doesn't.
It tells them that they're doing okay when they're not doing okay. It doesn't equip them to find good employment once they're out of school. I mean the whole system really is made to make people incapable of doing anything other than passing hamburgers out of a drive-through window.
Well, I've got good news for you, Chris. You're going to like this. I've got a theory. I got a theory that for the next few years, the rate of social promotion is going to decline, and here's why. I know for a fact the public schools are going crazy. They're desperate because parents are pulling their kids out of public school. Homeschooling is surging. Private school enrollment is increasing. They're losing those kids. What does that mean? They're losing dollars. And when they lose dollars, that means people are going to have to get cut off. So I think my theory is that they're going to cut down. They're going to be more critical about who they're promoting because they want to keep these kids in school longer because the total number of enrollment has been declining so precipitously.
Well, yeah, my problem with that is that the kids who were being withdrawn from failing schools are probably mostly kids who have parents who are concerned with their education. This is the population that we've been drawing into magnet schools, but the price of this has been to withdraw from the ordinary neighborhood schools the kids who are the better students. And this has been leaving the neighborhood schools in Hartford with more and more neglected kids, or a bigger proportion of their students are neglected kids. This is the core problem that we don't address. We have this permanent underclass in Connecticut and throughout the country, and it consists mainly of kids who don't have two parents in the home. We've got a single mother who is very stressed, sometimes disturbed, and is not really a good parent. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't good single parents. There are. There's many of them. But on the whole, single parenthood correlates with all the negative consequences of life, from inadequate education to unhappiness and depression and physical and mental illness. This social science is been pretty settled for a few decades now, and yet we just ignore it. We just let it go on. We destroy the family with welfare payments, with telling people it's okay to have kids outside of marriage because the government will support you, and the government will support you in the belief that it's cheaper for the government to support kids in inadequate homes than it is to take them, put them into group homes, or get them adopted. Well, you know what? It's cheaper in the short term, but in the long term, it's a disaster for society.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I have mixed emotions about public education. I mean, I got through school. I guess I turned out okay. I'm sure you went through. Did you go through public school or private school?
Yeah. I did go through public school here in Manchester, and yet. When I got married and we had a daughter, I was very grateful to the Catholic Church for maintaining a Catholic school system here in Manchester, because the public schools in Manchester are not performing even half as well as they were when I was going to school. You know, this was the kind of self-selection that I was just talking about. The kids who've got parents and who are insisting that they take their education seriously are, you know, as you remarked, they're tending to withdraw from the system and finding alternatives. But this still leaves us with the core of the underclass being socially promoted. And this is a disaster for society and for democracy. Look, it's a disaster for you know, the industry that I spent my life in, you know, which is the newspaper industry, and it's leading me to believe that there's going to be no future in Connecticut for any industry that depends on literacy and civic engagement.
Let me just shift gears for a second here, Chris. I want to talk about something that you also wrote about. My daughter recently moved from Manhattan. Prices, once COVID was over, they started skyrocketing rent prices again. So she recently moved over to Brooklyn, although still works in Manhattan. And while we were...
Brooklyn's as expensive as Manhattan.
Well, they found a pretty good deal. But what's happening in Brooklyn is something that's happening all over the place. And usually when you hear it, you think negative, or I don't, but when other people hear it, they think very negatively of it. And it's the concept of gentrification, where you've got people, investors buying neighborhoods, buying buildings, investing, fixing them up, and what happens is it kind of pushes the lower income folks out and the higher income folks in. Now it's transforming places, and this area in Brooklyn, I remember it from years ago. I was stunned the first time I went down there. After, I couldn't believe the area. It would look like a brand new place. I mean, new apartment buildings, new stores. I'm just absolutely beautiful. You know, what's your take on that? I mean, sometimes people do talk about it as if it's I guess it's tough if you can't afford the rents and you end up having to move out, you got to live somewhere. But I think they're beautifying these, a lot of times, really run down communities and neighborhoods.
Well, listen, rundown areas should be, built up. Our cities here in Connecticut, Hartford, New Haven, Bridgeport, they very much need gentrification. Mm-hmm. But the bigger issue is we got to bring down the cost of housing. There was a survey the other day that said that the cost of housing relative to incomes has never been more extreme than it is right now. The conference I went to 50 years ago about redistributing the poor really bears on this. You don't want the poor concentrated. You want to lift them up and integrate them at the same time. You can't do that without a lot of new housing. You can't do it unless people are able to support themselves better. But gentrification is exactly what Hartford and New Haven and Bridgeport need. And in fact, the mayors of Hartford and New Haven, Luke Ronan and Justin Ellicker, have been quoted a couple times as saying that they'd like to move a lot of their poor people out of the city and into the suburbs. Why? Because, you know, desperately poor people are a burden.
Yeah.
But you know, you can't deport the poor to Guatemala. I mean, these are our people,
right.
And you have to make living conditions affordable, and you've also got to make people capable of supporting themselves. And you know, we're not doing that. You know, in Singapore, they have a wonderful system in Singapore. I've been there a few times, and I think Bloomberg News had a story about their housing policy last year that I sent to a few people. In Singapore, the government builds tons of apartment buildings and condos, really, and it allows people to use their social insurance savings as down payments on purchasing this housing. And they also do something that we can't do for constitutional reasons. Singapore is a fairly racially sensitive place. You've got a lot of Malays, you've got a lot of Chinese, you've got a lot of Caucasians. Singapore assigns people, assigns people to the housing they can buy, so that it prevents any ghettoization and, you know, too much tribalism. But Singapore basically ensures that anybody who wants to own his own home can do so, and does so, you know, with in part with his social insurance money that he can use for a down payment. And so you get an ownership society in Singapore. You have much less income inequality than we have here in the United States, and you get a pretty cohesive society that way. Your
ownership makes the difference, Chris, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah. I think that's what we should be trying to emulate here. I don't know it really can be done on a state level, because if you're giving stuff away in one state, everybody's going to
migrate, sure.
The intent of our housing policy with government subsidized loans originally was to increase ownership of housing. Once you get ownership of housing, you know, you've got a really substantial stake in society, and you begin to respect property rights.
The difference in the world. Chris, I'm sorry.
It does make all the difference.
I got to stop our conversation here for the new, but thank you so much, and I always appreciate talking with you, and I know the folks love hearing from you. Chris Powell, Journal Inquirer. Thanks so much, Chris. Have a good day.
Thanks, Will. Feel better. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!